at the end of this process that we're going to engage in, if I can speculate, I'm pretty confident you and people in the condition that you are not going to be excluded by the city.
Mr. Leonard, I would agree with you on what you said about trying to clean up fraud, which is a separate police problem,
right?
Really. The thing of it is, I think that the state of Oregon government really, really messed up on this one. It would have been simple Simon stuff for them, considering they know exactly who has the disabled parking permit. They're keyed to an Oregon driver's license. It would have been just easy for them, for somebody to press the button on the computer and send us letters.
Yeah.
No, but they did not do that, not even once. And I really resent that, because I don't know, I suppose it wasn't malice. I think it's probably just incompetence. But in any event, sir, it has not been done. And I think that if the city of Portland, which has been very, very good to handicapped people, gets into this, I think it will be a singular mistake. It will be a step backwards.
I don't think we're going to.
I hope not, sir.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Veronica?
Good morning. Veronica Bernier from PSU Alumni 2005, Community Health Education and Public Health. I'd like to speak to the issue of access to parking for disabled people. And I'd like to point out first that, as my former head nurse said at Peninsula Hospital in Burlingame, Linda Smith-Warnicki, she's an RN, she said, some people's disabilities don't show. And I would like to underline that, because whenever a person has been disabled, there's some part of them that they lose, and it doesn't always show. However, at the same time, there are some people who would take advantage of that and use a van to get into a place where they could block the view of passersby and somebody might trip or fall. And so those kind of things need to be looked at too. But I want to point out one specific thing. I think that the DMV is doing a great job of watching the disabled permits. But at PSU, at the Starbucks parking lot, somebody got real creative and put in a curb in front of the two entrances. One is to Panini and one is to Starbucks Coffee House. And I noticed myself the other day that a man in a wheelchair really couldn't access it. He had to go around. And he had to go around a painting truck, which obscured him from view of another truck, a commercial truck. So those kind of things are important. We can't really block access to people that are manipulating their wheelchairs to get in and out of pedestrian traffic in the parking lot going to a store. So I underline that as it's just a little small area that could be improved. And when I saw it, I had a problem with my ankle at the time that didn't show. And I had to go around the curb instead of stepping up on the curb. And I know a wheelchair can't go over the curb, so I really would have questioned that. The man who put in the curb was not a licensed contractor for the city. I double-checked that. And so those kind of things are real important. Access for pedestrians, particularly disabled, people with walkers, wheelchairs, and people using quad canes are really important. Those people need to be mainstreamed into the city, wherever it is, if it's at PSU, or the Malls of America, whatever, and even the quadriplegics, really, it can't be understated enough that they need to be put into society, too. That little trip to the mall helps them all day long. They talk about it for weeks. So just underline that. Be sure that you support pedestrian access for people who are disabled, and also taking the curbs away from the trips around the sidewalks of Portland. As former mayor, your cats said Portland's a city that works. It works well for all of its people included. And Mayor Tom Potter, who isn't here today, supports that too. I know him well. He's always supported people in all walks of life. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Veronica.
Hi, my name's Joe Uris. I'm representing my wife in this situation. I rushed down here because I only today realized that this hearing was taking place. And I apologize, I'm not all dressed up and not very well prepared. My wife could not do this because, in fact, she suffers from an intermittent MS condition. It has challenged her. Some of you know her, a very bright and active woman, but she just simply wasn't up for it. First of all, what happened in Salem, as I think almost everyone here agrees, was a bizarre travesty. an organization allegedly representing veterans that has an incredibly bad record in terms of how much of its monies, you may not know this, how much of its monies gathered from citizens actually go to supporting veterans, successfully lobbied in a situation in which there was no testimony, as has been brought out before, no adequate information to the citizenry, and created a law which apparently will help people with wheelchairs, but in fact begins a process which has a precedent implication that will disallow persons with a variety of handicaps from being able to have access to the city. I don't want to belabor points made by others. I think it's interesting that you're creating a committee in this matter, but that means, in fact, that many people are going to have to be engaged in testimony and an argument in a matter that really does not require that. If there's an issue of enforcement, then clearly the responsibility of the city and others in that enforcement area is already in the books. For my wife, her condition is not apparent. She's a very bright woman. She's a fairly physically active woman, but many, many days her neurological situation makes it impossible for her to walk more than, say, half a block. This, if passed, as presented by the state, would, in essence, take her out of the action in a variety of ways. And the destruction of the access to the unlimited parking for in the metered zones would have even more implication for her, because it would mean that she would have to try to rush to get back to her metered parking spot. Any kind of effort that puts real stress on her legs can injure her, and that injury can last for several months because it's neurological in nature. I know she hates having anyone have to talk about this in this way. She's a very proud person. I am quite angered and very upset with this whole situation, and I think many of you are as well. I don't see that a commodification with testimony will resolve the problem in a manner that's favorable to the many, many, many people who have disabilities that are not obvious or apparent. Nor do I think that those on wheelchairs would want this kind of discrimination against their fellow handicapped persons. So I urge you to just tell the state to back off.
So, Joe, I would just say, for both of you gentlemen, I particularly get into passion with what you feel about this. So I feel compelled to say that when this comes back before us, I would not support anything that took away the privileges that you currently have.
That's a relief.
And I would venture to say that the whole council would feel that way. But there is this other area that
the enforcement area.
Well, it isn't just the enforcement area. It might be the criteria as well. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
For some who get permits. I don't know enough about that to say, but clearly your wife fits the criteria. Clearly, sir, you fit the criteria, but I just want to have some questions asked about that to make sure that others aren't taking advantage of it, and that's it. I mean, for the examples you're giving, absolutely. I mean, I can't imagine this council not agreeing.
And there are, remember, we're trying to make more space and more access available, and every time someone abuses this, it's,
of course,
it's right. Less aspects. So like I said, this is we wanted to be very public and open and transparent about this, and have a group put together that includes stakeholders and experts, and expose them to some of the situations that we face on trying to manage the situation and benefit from that interaction. Did we have any additional people to testify? Okay. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
If you're all three going to pass the resolutions as proposed, I have nothing to say, but I do have one comment.
Please, you have to get near a microphone, and please tell us your name, and you have 3 minutes.
Well, if you're all three going to pass the resolutions as proposed, I don't have anything. I don't need to say anything. But
well, we don't. You may change our mind.
Well, I don't want to. Well,
this is your chance.
It's hard for me to get up.
That's right. You can pull the microphone.
I can just stay here. My name is Albert Hoguet, H-O-G-U-E-T. I echo what the gentleman here and what Mr. Uris said. I have post-polio syndrome, and as you can see, I can walk, but I have many of the same problems that Mr. Uris' wife has, and value the handicap placard. And it's a big It's a big part of my life. I live the downtown area is my neighborhood, although I don't live right downtown. It's where I come for essentially everything I do. I point out, though, the definition of wheelchair user, as I looked it up on the web, and I did not know anything about this until I read the One Lima Week article on Thursday. I read the papers religiously, and if this had been noticed anywhere, I'm sure I would have picked up on it. But wheelchair user is defined as a person who uses a wheelchair or similar low-powered, motorized, or mechanically propelled vehicle designed specifically for use by a person with a physical disability. So if you were to defer taking any action and let this law go into effect, the enforcement types, basically, once somebody, no handicap placard could satisfy that definition because there's no wheelchair on it, and everybody would be subject to a ticket. Unless you're just going to say, well, we're going to let it go, but we're not going to enforce it. I mean, this resolution solves that problem. Otherwise, you've got law. Who knows, you know, how tight these tight patrol or traffic people would be in giving tickets. But there's nothing that would hold them back from giving a ticket, and forcing somebody who got a ticket to have to go into court and say, well, you know, the city says they're not going to enforce this law. But I think it would be creating an extreme can of worms because I'm sure DMV is going to start cranking out these wheelchair placards as soon as the law goes into effect. So I urge the council to adopt the resolutions as proposed and let the situation be as it is until this task force does its job.
Thank you, sir, very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Unless there's anyone else that wishes to testify on 1511, which is a resolution, and 1512 moves to January 2nd, we'll take the vote on the resolution.
1511. Adams?
Great testimony this morning, and if you're interested in serving on the committee, talk to Ellis or Norm. I'm pleased to vote aye.
Leonard?
Yes, and just to reiterate, I wouldn't support, and I would just venture to say the council will not support a restriction of people who have disabilities, whether they're in a wheelchair or not. I do think this is just one of those examples where a very small group of people have abused this system and created a problem for a larger group of people who don't. And so we'll be very careful and thoughtful in sorting that out. Commissioner Adams will, I know, bring back a very well-thought-out set of recommendations that I'm positive we can all support. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I think that this is an important task force, but I will say that I do think that there is a lot of abuse. And that is really what has to end. And I think the numbers that the statistics you showed of 14% to 21% of parkers at any given time in a zone are displaying disabled permits. I think that's volumes above probably what the proportion of the population are on any given time. And I guess I'm having a hard time thinking about the rationale for. Although I think Joe Uris gave a good example a second ago, but the rationale for being able to park unlimited, you know, I see having spaces adjacent to public entrances of buildings and in private parking lots, but the rationale for being able to park unlimited time in a 30-minute zone in the middle of a block, I'm not quite sure if I see the nexus of the benefit there, other than it's an historical benefit that has been enjoyed for some period of time. So I guess, you know, I for one am sort of open to exploring the rationale behind that. A little bit more. Aye.
All right. Resolution passes. We're now to 1513, which is non-emergency first reading.
Consent to transfer Eckert Sanitary Service residential solid waste and recycling collection franchise to Heiberg Garbage Service.
Any questions from council? If not, 1513 moves to January 2nd for a second reading. 1514.
Consent to transfer of Trout Brothers Sanitary and Recycling Residential Solid Waste and Recycling Collection Franchise to Heiberg Garbage Service.
Any questions from council? This 1514 moves to January 2nd for a second reading. 1515, non-emergency.
Accept a donation of $1,575,000 from the Portland Parks Foundation on behalf of an anonymous donor for the development of South Park Block 5.
Any questions from council on 1515? Hearing none, this non-emergency item.
A substitute?
We have a substitute?
Yes, we do have a substitute. I'm sorry. A substitute that was reflects some comments OMF had, I believe. So I guess I would move the substitute.
That was distributed yesterday. I have an extra copy if you need it.
What's the nature of the change?
Oh, here it is.
You know, frankly, there was nothing substantive. To my mind, nothing substantive. There was pretty just OMF wanting to make sure the language looked good.
Okay. Is there a second to the motion to move the substitute?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded.
Second.
Let's vote on any discussion on the substitute. Hearing none, let's vote on the substitute.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye. Aye.
Sorry. Saltzman?
Aye.
All right. As substituted, 1515 moves to January 2nd for second reading. Please read ordinance, non-emergency ordinance 1516.
Amend coordination agreement with TMT Development Company, Inc. for the development of South Park Block 5.
Any council questions or discussion on this issue? All right, moves to January 2nd for second reading. That gets us to non-emergency ordinance 1517.
Accept a grant from the Kinsman Foundation in the amount of $50,000 for fiscal year 2007-08 for a repair project at Pittock Mansion.
Unless objection, moves to January 2nd for second reading.
Commissioner Adams? I've noticed you refer to these as non-emergency ordinances. They still have their emergency clauses on them, but you're just not voting on them until next week, until the 2nd. So there'll be emergencies when you vote them on the 2nd.
Thank you, Harry. Let the record show what Harry said. All right, that gets us to item 1518, which is a resolution.
Declare support for improved city process for public records request.
Good morning, Auditor Blackmer.
Good morning, Council President Adams and other members of Council. What this represents is a response to the 2007 legislature, which had revised the laws regarding public records requests to help with issues around timeliness, costs, and better access to the contact persons. Excuse me. The law now requires that jurisdictions respond to requesters in a timely way, if not with the records, with some description of what the next steps would be, and also posting the charges in a public place as well as the contact person or persons. So we put together a work group comprised of members of the City Attorney's Office, the Bureau of Technology Services, the Office of Management and Finance, and the Auditor's Office, and I wanted to extend my appreciation to them in terms of helping us through the various issues here. Excuse me. With me is Christine Jividen from the City Attorney's Office, who actually performed most of the day-to-day work around this. She communicated with the bureaus about their response practices for records requests, their charges for those requests, and the contact persons. So we put all that together and circulated several drafts to the bureaus, to council staff, to get their feedback on the request form that we prepared, as well as the charges. And we also have a frequently asked questions document, one for the public and one for employees. So before you is a resolution that that basically declares that the city will start using this new public records request form on or before January 1, 2008, which is the deadline set by the legislature. We believe that the form, along with the posting of the charges and contact persons on Portland Online, will assist the public when they're seeking records from the city. We also intend to come back to the work group to reform in a few months, talking to the bureaus to figure out if there's anything we need to refine in terms of the form or there are likely to be more frequently asked questions that we can add to help people guide their way through getting responses to record requests. Also before you is an amendment that the mayor suggested. It's a small change to the form. It adds a box that is a statement from the requester
requesting the consideration of waiving or reducing of charges. The checkbox signals to the city to consider whether the request primarily benefits the general public. Now, we know that some bureaus waive all or some of public records request charges, and that's permitted in this process as well. So from our standpoint, this is a means for a citizen to kind of signal to the bureau or to the city that they'd like that taken into consideration. So
which was the box that the mayor
This is had? A box. It's in the upper box under the requester information. Mm-hmm. It states copies may be furnished without charge or at substantially reduced fees if the custodian determines that the waiver or reduction of fees is in the public interest. And it does this request primarily benefit the general public, yes or no?
Okay.
And then asking the requester to describe how they see that as a public benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So we have no problem. The committee had talked about this issue, and from our standpoint, it's a consideration that can be added without any serious problems. So this is one of those things that, in terms of an amendment, you know, we're more than happy to support that.
Do we need to amend your item today then?
It's a resolution, so, and it can take effect as soon as it's voted on. So yes, if you could do that would be great.
I was just curious. I noticed the other box about is the request related to a lawsuit? Does that have any bearing on whether we?
No, it's more a signal for us that it's something that the city attorney's office would like to see what records are being obtained from the city related to a lawsuit.
So if they refuse to answer that, do we still give them the information?
I believe the records law holds regardless.
So yes.
Yes, we'd probably notify the city attorney's office if they refuse to answer also.
But passing this resolution doesn't require people to fill out this form to get a public document.
No.
I think we need to make that really clear to the bureaucracy. When I, just by way of an example, when I got the Water Bureau 2.5 years ago, if somebody, for an example, called up to get minutes from a public meeting that were one page long, they would make them fill out the form, pay the fee, and it made people really suspicious of the Water Bureau. So one of the things we did was discontinue requiring these forms to be filled out for routine requests. Now, if there were more complicated, like analyses, reports, those kinds of things, even then we didn't make them fill it out if it was just generally somebody wanted it emailed to them. So just knowing as I do how the bureaucracy sometimes follows the rules to a T, what I don't want to do is go back to a system where people make routine requests for documents that are easily emailed, that it isn't that big of a deal, and require this stuff to be filled out.
That's a very good point.
How do we make that point, though?
Well, and I think that's in our frequently asked questions that it's the easiest, you know, that requiring this. I mean, we require there's a companion form, which is the city's response to public records request, but you only have to fill that form out if you don't give them the information immediately. So to a certain degree, there's an incentive for someone to say, well, here's the information because I don't feel like filling out this form that says here's the response, which is it's going to take us a while or it's going to cost you money or whatever.
Because I know 2.5 years ago, the Water Bureau, for some reason, thought it had to have every request reduced to writing and it had to be a public records request. And it was just kind of a culturally entrenched process that created suspicion amongst the public, more suspicion towards, in this case, the Water Bureau.
Do you have anything you want to add?
I could just add on that note that as it stands right now, several bureaus have forms. They're slightly the same. Some are different. Some are similar. This is sort of intended to at least have one rather than five or six different forms doing the same thing. And I think everybody, lots of times people will call in and say, you know, how do I make a request? And it's, you know, you can fill this out. And that helps us to get all the information we need to. It's got their name, phone number. Sometimes you get an email and that's all you get. You know, you can't always contact. So it should be helpful, I think.
One of the other good things, we have some more standard copy fees than we didn't have that before. Each bureau set its own fees for 8.5 by 11 pages. So what we did, Christine, in surveying all the bureaus, got their costs and then basically looked at what the most common one was and sent it back out and said, can you all live with these costs? So for the standard kinds of requests, it's a much more predictable cost for the citizens. There's some bureaus have specific kinds of documents that require additional scrutiny, like blueprints may require additional equipment, or redaction of confidential information requires extra costs. So those are separately listed, but for the standard kinds of documents, there's a much more predictable cost for the public. And that's again something the Bureau can waive. If it's a few pages, it's probably easier to give it out than to collect the money and do all of that. But for very large requests of hundreds of pages, it gives much more predictability for the requester.
Any other questions or discussions from Council? Entertain the motion for the amended form.
So moved.
Second. Let's vote on the amendment.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Unless there's other discussion or if there's anyone signed up to testify.
We want to announce that the evening meetings.
Well, I got to take the vote first.
Okay.
Yep.
Oh, it's a resolution. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Anyone who would like to testify on this matter? Anyone from the press in the room that would like to testify on this matter, one way or another? Silence, of course, means you love it. All right. Let's vote on the resolution.
Adams.
Thank you for your work on this. It's a very useful tool, and I can imagine all the effort that went into it. And I think the point of especially trying to standardize our response so that we improve the overall quality of our responses, I think, will be very useful. Aye.
Leonard?
Yes, thank you. Aye.
Saltzman?
Yeah, this really is good work. Thanks a lot. Aye.
All right, tonight's meeting is canceled due to lack of a quorum. That agenda item will be heard on January 3rd?
2 p.m.
2 p.m. on January 3rd. Happy holidays, everybody. We're adjourned. We're recessed. Is it recessed or adjourned?
Adjourned.
We're adjourned.
The media's after you now. Look at them. Pressing.
You're going to have to fill out the form.
Yeah, you got to fill out the form.
Thanks for answering the question.